Whoa, wait a minute, huh? Hold up, what? Oh, okay. Did we just lose the f***ing Canucks?
You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Out of the top of the point for Hughes, long shot, tip, they score!
Man, I had goosebumps, almost had tears in my eyes to start the game. Like, it was so raucous.
Canucks forechecking in the Nashville zone. Garland sends it out front. Joshua scores!
Him and Garland together have really kind of added this, like a swagger to our team.
I think I got my swagger back.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough for the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling. They recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live and excited and a tiny bit tired from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, we got a big show. First show in, what is it? For us, God, our entire careers. First show in 9 years, anyway, that we're coming in on the heels of a round one playoff victory in Vancouver. It is exciting. We are excited. We got a big guest list today. It begins at 6:30. David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host. He was so excited. He shouted out this very show. That's right, during the intermission of yesterday's 4-2 win for the Vancouver Canucks over the Nashville Predators in game one of their round one series. So we'll talk to David at 6:30. 7 o'clock, how awesome is this? The Canucks win, and the Leafs get trounced on Saturday night. Mmm, it's so delicious, it must be fattening. James Myrtle from The Athletic in Toronto is going to join us to talk about the Leafs' 5-1 loss on Saturday in their opening game of their opening round series against Boston. 8 o'clock, Randeep Janda is going to join us. He was on the call last night for the Canucks win. He was at Rogers Arena. So, too, was my co-host, Jason Brough. So, they will really be able to tell you all what the electricity in the building was like. No giveaways today, no contest today, but that's fine. We've already got a ton of texts coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket at 650-650. If you want to weigh in, if you want to share your thoughts, if you want us to talk about anything, we will indulge you today. Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. Text in your thoughts and your what we learns. We're going to do those at the end of the show. Hashtag it WWL. What did you learn over the last 72 hours in sports? Working in reverse on the guest list. 8 o'clock, it's Randeep Janda. 7 o'clock, it's James Myrtle. 6:30, it's David Amber. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance. Making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Dakota Joshua, one of the greatest playoff debuts in Canucks franchise history. 2 goals and an assist. Canucks storm back twice, rally from deficits for a 4-2 win over the Nashville Predators in game one of their playoff series. I want to play both the shorty and the batch call of the 3-2 goal, the Dakota Joshua goal. Not only was it the fastest 2 goals, 12 seconds in Canucks playoff history, it also caught both of our play-by-play guys totally off guard.
So you're going to throw them under the bus on the morning?
Let's start, okay, let's start with Brandon Batchelor. 3-2, Canucks go up. Eventual game-winning goal for Dakota Joshua.
The time of the goal is brought to you by Crow, your trusted advisors for 55 years. Learn more at crowmckay.ca. Canucks forechecking in the Nashville zone. Garland sends it out front. Joshua scores!
Folks, that is how you do it. That is how you get a sponsor right in there.
That was
pretty
good.
Good,
though.
It was great.
Didn't catch them off guard. I thought they were going to be like, "What? The, why is the crowd so loud?"
He was in the middle of an ad read, practically.
Okay. Every time he does one, though, the Canucks score. So I think this has got to be a regular thing.
He should just be doing it on the
ad
read.
Best money Chroma Guy's ever spent. Too. Yeah,
Chroma Guy's loving this right now.
I was writing out a tweet on how good the Miller line had been all night. And then finally, the Miller line playing out there with Quinn Hughes gets a goal. And then I just added at the end of my tweet, and now Joshua has scored.
Yeah.
Also, another thing has happened. Yeah, that was incredible. Do we have the shorty call?
Yeah,
you want to play the shorty call? Let's do it. It was so good. Let's play both goals.
Regular season playoffs combined. Quinn Hughes up to 20 points. There's another chance to score. Dakota Joshua.
So I think about the times that I've been inside Rogers Arena for big goals. I wasn't there for the Slay the Dragon goal, and I wasn't there for Crosby's goal. But that goal last night and how loud it was, for me personally, I don't know how many times it's been topped before. I remember the crowd when the Canucks were skating out onto the ice before Game 7 of the Stanley Cup final against the Bruins was unbelievably loud. I remember Pavel Bure's goal in Game 3. That was at the Pacific Coliseum before he got tossed.
Right.
That was super loud. Like, there have been moments when you're like, oh my God, like, it could never possibly get louder. But, you know, regardless of whether or not that was the loudest the Rogers Arena has ever been, or the loudest a crowd at a Canucks game has ever been, you know, it doesn't really matter. We don't it was so lively and so boisterous. And this is something that we've talked about, not just this year, even going back to, the dark years when we dare to dream about these moments and we dare to look ahead and you say, you know what? Now we're getting to the point where there hasn't been a playoff game in this arena for so long that That first game is going to be so electric in there, because you don't take those for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Because there got to a point in Vancouver where the first round was kind of like, I think I'm going to save my money and go to a second round game.
Sure.
Because it was pretty expensive. And I remember, it was maybe like AV's final year, when they played the Sharks in the first round, and you're kind of like, I don't really want to go to a first round game. Like, we'd seen it before,
sure.
But now when there's almost a decade without that happening, you come back and you're like, everyone is fired up.
Yep.
I showed up intentionally an hour before the game. The plaza in front of Rogers Arena was packed. The Canucks did a great job having a bunch of stuff out there. Their bands playing. There was like a marching band playing when I was like, are we at a college football game? But it was lively. You know, it's a big game when the guys go out for their early warm-up.
Yep.
And the crowd is there.
There's
and
a
they're
pop,
and
yeah.
They're cheering, and you can feel the buzz in the building. So, we're going to talk about this game more in depth, but I would say congratulations to the Canucks for pulling out that game in the third period. A terrific third period, huge third period. The guys that have really been driving the bus for the last little while drove the bus in that third period. And congratulations to everyone who showed up, who was there, who was loud. By the sounds of it, not only did the crowd help the players, it gave the players, who've experienced a lot in their hockey careers, it gave the players goosebumps. It gave them an experience that they'll never forget as professional athletes.
Right. So Ian Cole was doing media in the aftermath. And consider the source here, right? Ian Cole's played on, I think, 8 different teams. He's won a pair of Stanley Cups. He's been around. He's been in markets. He's seen things. He's done things. He's accomplished things. And he's at the, in the twilight of a pretty long career. Here's what Ian Cole had to say about the atmosphere in Rogers Arena for Game 1 last night ahead of an eventual 4-2 win for the Vancouver Canucks.
You know, guys were saying, like, man, I had goosebumps, almost had tears in my eyes to start the game. Like, it was so raucous, so so intense, so loud, and you could feel the passion. So, you know, it was really something that we wanted to come out and have a good showing, and I thought we obviously finished it well.
So here's a big question that we got right now. What was the main reason the Canucks won this game?
They scored more goals than the other team.
Oh, good one.
That is the analysis you're only going to get on the morning show.
The 12 seconds in the third period, though, where the guys who have carried them all year stepped up big time. First, it was Quinn Hughes scoring, but it was the Miller line that gained possession in the offensive zone to allow that. The Miller line was incredible all night. And I'm talking about all of them. Miller led the way, and boy, was he incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He was... It was all effort from him. He was laying hits. He was taking guys wide and going like, I'm just going to try and beat you. I'm just going to go around you. He was on the puck all the time. He was – that was the definition, I think you could say, of inspirational hockey, what JT Miller had last night. And, of course, Quinn Hughes, who's upped his goal scoring this season. He's the captain. He's the leader of the team along with JT Miller. He scores the goal. Then, right after that, Tocchet puts Lindholm, Garland, and Joshua out there. They get the puck deep. Lindholm goes in. Lindholm was flying last night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the most energetic we've ever seen Lindholm. Lindholm gets in on the forecheck. He gets to the Predators defenseman who's got it behind the net. Leans on him. Remember, folks. Position before possession. I nearly forgot. I nearly forgot that, you know,
your inner coach is
you
coming
get
out on the
body
air.
Position first, take the man, and then what happens? Then the puck support comes. Connor Garland comes in with the puck support. He's right there on the tail of Elias Lindholm. He gets the loose puck. Dakota Joshua gets open in front of the net. You don't think the Preds are a little rattled at the point after the Hughes goal? Maybe they're not thinking so well right now. Maybe they're a little bit rattled in that situation. They've just blown a third period lead. Dakota Joshua uses his size, his frame, his reach to get open in front of the net, takes the pass from Garland. How many times have we seen a Garland to Joshua pass? Joshua buries it as he's done, like he didn't do for the first half of the season, but he's really started to do it now. It's 3-2, and really after that, even though the Canucks had to have a couple of penalty kills and, you know, the Preds pulled the goalie, like I was very confident the Canucks were going to win after Joshua scored that goal because they're also a very good team protecting the lead in the third.
Yeah, and Joshua's the talking point of the evening, right? I mean, that was a coming out party, a coronation for a national media, I would think. They probably didn't get a lot of opportunities to see him play this year. That was the only playoff game on at the time. Everyone was glued. And in his Canucks and playoff debut, second best ever. I think it was Jeff Cortnell had 4 points in his Canucks playoff debut. Dakota Joshua finishes with 3-2 goals and assists, earning high praise from his head coach, Rick Tocchet, who talked about the swagger that Joshua and Garland bring to the table. Here's Rick Tocchet on that duo following a 4-2 win over the Predators in game one.
Dakota just doesn't know how good he can be. He knew there was another level there. We just had to whether push him or find it. And I give him all the credit in the world because he, you know, I think he knows now what it's going to take. You know, he needs I thought this summer he learned from it. And I think him and Garland together have really kind of added this, like a swagger to our team as that, you know, tactically the third line. I think that's really helped. And they both, Garland and him together have really taken a role leadership-wise. A chunk of it. And I think that's really helped Dakota's game.
So when we're talking about who was the Canucks' best player, there's an argument for a bunch of guys, and that's always a good thing after a win. For the record, Dakota Joshua was named the first star. Quinn Hughes was named the second star. So JT Miller even got shut out of the three stars because I think they named a Nashville player the third star. Elias Lindholm, I think, deserves a shout-out too. He scored. He had an assist. He was terrific all night.
Mm-hmm. He's been really good since he came back from the injury, by the way.
But what about Demko?
Demko was fantastic.
I was going to say, you didn't mention Demko yet.
So he wasn't getting any of the post-game praise. I think part of it had to do with the fact that they didn't allow that many shots. It was 20 saves on 22 shots, which is a 909 save percentage. So I understand that that's not vaulting to the top of everybody's list of who do we need to talk about. But the save in the first period, I thought that was a tone setter and a table setter maybe for the rest of the series. Like, okay, he's back. Also, you're going to have a tough time just beating the guy, plain and simple. Like, it's probably going to have to be on screens, taking his eye. It's going to be tough to beat him, right?
Or like, seeing eye shots like the first goal by Zucker was.
I also thought it was nice coming in on the heels of whatever that was that they did in Winnipeg in that 7-6 game, because there was, like, no goaltending in that game, right? It was, yeah, like Alexander Forgiev coming in and allowing every second shot that was on net, right?
And Connor Hellebuck going, I like how this Forgiev guy plays. I'm going to do the same thing.
So it was like, you know, you think it might be all open and loosey-goosey, and then that super tight game compared to the one that preceded it. So I thought Demko was fantastic, and we'll talk to David Amber about that, because in the first intermission, that save was one of the primary talking points.
It's funny because Saros and Demko, I don't know if there's a bit of a rivalry, but coming up, like, they were along the same development path. So they played each other head-to-head, a lot of international games, and now they're head-to-head in a playoff series, and it did not disappoint in game one.
So we want to hear all your comments about the game. You can text them into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you, in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Butis in Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com. And don't forget to get your What We Learns in for the hour three segment. Here's a text that just came in. It is so nice having big physical defensemen, Zadorov and Myers, crushing guys. Yeah, let's talk about the physicality of that game.
I've never seen Tyler Myers play such a good game as a Canuck. Like, that was insanity.
Yeah.
Really, like, he was just so physically imposing. I was like, who is this guy? Like, it was amazing.
The defense was really good, all of them. They all battled, and I think this is why you've seen more and more teams go, okay, we can have one undersized guy if he's a puck mover and skilled and he can run the power play. And in the Canucks case, that's obviously Nikita Zadorov. I mean, Quinn Hughes.
Mark Friedman.
Yeah, Mark Friedman. Yeah. No. And then the rest of the guys, you know, for the most part, you want those guys to have size, toughness, nastiness, I hate saying this, but length, like, and that's what we've seen out of a lot of recent Stanley Cup winners. Rick Tocchet would always talk about the Vegas defense, about how they're not only, you know, good players out there, but they were big and tough and tough to get through, right? Like, you know, because they're so big and because they're so long, like, it's not, you can't just dipsy doodle through them, through the guts of the ice. And Zadorov played very physical. Myers played very physical. Ian Cole was battling out there. So was Carson Soucy. And then you had the Canucks forwards, JT Miller throwing a bunch of hits, Dakota Joshua throwing some big hits. Even like Mikheyev played some heavy minutes out there. I thought he looked pretty good. He got in on the forecheck and crushed a few guys. It was a very, very physical game on both sides too, because Ian Cole took a big hit too. And you have to, you know, talking about that line before the playoffs starts is like, the playoffs hurt. You have to embrace it. Sometimes you got to take a hit to make a play. And sometimes you're in a position where you know you're going to get hit, and you still got to get, you just got to get hit, you know, and that's playoff hockey, because the other team is trying as well. I did think it was interesting after the game that Rick Tocchet said there's a fine line between playing physical, you want that to happen, and not running around. Mm-hmm. And he actually said there was a couple chances that the Preds got when we were running around and we were chasing guys. And, you know, you're fired up by the crowd and you want to rock someone. But if you do that, sometimes that allows odd man rushes. That just screws it up for your team. And it's funny watching some of the other games around the NHL. Like, I saw Ryan Reeves chasing hits for Toronto, and he gives up an odd man rush, goes the other way, and I think the Bruins scored on the play. You saw Matt Rempe, although he got a big goal for the Rangers. He also took kind of a dumb penalty right at the beginning of the game because he's running around there. He's like, I don't care if his back's to me or whatever, I'm going to hit this guy. Like, there is that fine line that you got to walk, and you got to be in control of your emotions. And I thought the Canucks, for the most part, did a really good job of that. When you hear those guys talking about how, like, I had goosebumps and even, like, tears in my eyes that this crowd was so good, you've got to control your emotions. And sometimes, especially if you get behind in a game, all of a sudden those emotions that you had can turn to frustration. They can turn to a little bit of panic. And the Canucks went into that third period trailing 2-1. And there were a bunch of times during the regular season where the Canucks failed in that regard. But then there are also some moments where that they can probably look back into. I think about that home game against the Boston Bruins where they were comfortable trailing in the game and just staying patient and not, you know, diving in, as Tockett would say, not chasing the game, just being comfortable with their game, staying in their game, and trusting that the chances will come.
Well, look, I mean, for all the positives that were thrown out there last night, that game was hanging in the balance for an awfully long time. If you go back and look at the numbers on it, the Canucks did not play with the lead until the 3-2 Joshua goal in midway through the third period. So they spent a lot of this game either playing tied or trailing. Demko made some big saves. Penalty kills were big. But that's an important point you bring up that Tockett also brought up, talking about in order to be successful, you have to, you know, the old cliche, be comfortable being uncomfortable, being able to stick with it. Here's what Rick Tockett said about that after his team rallied to win 4-2 against the Preds on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think if you're going to be successful, there's going to be times where you got to be comfortable playing a 1-0. You're down 1-0, or you might be down 2-0, and there's 30 minutes left in the game. Maybe in the past, you know, you might dive in, or guys get frustrated, and they try to push the pace too much. Especially the last 15, 20 games, just to hang in there. It's okay. And I think that was a temperament tonight. Hopefully it's another learning lesson that, hey, it's a good thing. You know, and there might be a chance we might be down 2-0, and it might not go our way. It's okay. Like, I think you just got to be patient. If you watch a lot of the good teams like Tampa over the years, they're okay being down 2-1 with 10 minutes left. They just stick with it, and I think you can learn from the teams like that, their resolve.
So that's it for the Canucks talk for today's show. We're going to do FA Cup coming up on the other side. Huge result.
Finally.
Oh, Coventry got screwed.
Coventry did get screwed. I feel really bad for Coventry. I feel really bad for the listeners that aren't picking up on this bit and think that we're going to turn to the
FA Cup. Some guy is yelling at his radio right now.
No!
Swerving in his
traffic. I need more!
Yeah.
You got 23
minutes. I just
turned
on the radio.
And if you missed it, you have to download the podcast. David Amber is going to join us next. Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, NHL host. He was on the panel last night. The return of playoff hockey to Vancouver. Get fired up, everybody. It's going to be a fun ride. I can feel it on a Monday morning. 2.5 hours left. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tommy Novak gets it right wing. Here's Luke Evangelista centered in front. What a save by Demko! A tremendous right pad stop by the former Canuck, Anthony Beauvillier, who was wide open at the left circle. That looked like a sure goal.
What a year and a half. I've seen it many times. You know, where he's just made that spectacular save to keep us in. You know, it's a two-goal swing. You know, when a goal, you know, you're down 1-0 and the guy makes a save, that, you know, it's a two-goal swing that he just made for you.
6:30 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. David Amber, Hockey Night Canada, Sportsnet NHL host, is going to join us in just a moment here. Hour one of this show is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. That sound you heard coming back from break, that was Rick Tocchet talking about his starting goalie, Thatcher Demko, and that huge save he made in the first period of Vancouver's 4-2 win over the Nashville Predators in Game 1 of their opening round playoff series. And that was the topic of conversation that our next guest spearheaded during the first intermission of yesterday's broadcast. Joining us now, David Amber, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, David. How are you?
Good. I'm sure Canucks Nation is loving life right now. That was awesome, man. The building was amazing. The emotions there. The game was awesome. Tocchet must be so thrilled. Demko's back to being Demko. The third line was doing its thing. You know, you couldn't have written a better script. So happy for Canucks fans. And it was just a great game. It was really, really fun to be a part of.
Well, first off, thanks for the shout out during the intermission yesterday. I was watching, and my sister-in-law was like, "Oh, you are a noteworthy individual. That's nice." So that was good. It was great. And of course, you were talking about the Demko save, and I know that there was a lot that happened after that and everything. But in that moment, when you're coming in from the first intermission, in light of the fact that Demko only got a couple games returning from injury in the regular season before going into the playoffs, I imagine you and the rest of the guys on the panel had to be pretty impressed with the dexterity and the flexibility on that one from number 35.
Jake Allen was like, "Oh man, I couldn't have made that save. I don't have that in me." And he said that like with a little bit of wow, sort of just noting how good Demko is. I mean, the lateral movement, the fact he was able to splay out like that, and you know, that is a huge save, right? Like, if it's 2-0 Nashville, you know, you just never know how that's going to turn. I know that's the most dangerous lead. I know there would have been a lot of time left, but you just don't know. It could create doubt and everything else. I think what that did is it allowed, you know, the Canucks team and maybe even Thatcher Demko to say, "Yeah, I'm 100% healthy. I'm fine. And I'm ready for this moment." You know, you don't want to make more of it than it is, but it's those types of saves that, let's put it this way, the Avalanche weren't getting last night. You know, there's a lot of teams going, "Man, I wish we had a Thatcher Demko in our lineup," because often games come down to one big moment, one big save. And when you have a goalie like Thatcher Demko, you're in games because you know he has it in him to make those types of saves at the right time.
David, are more and more people outside of Vancouver learning about Dakota Joshua? Because this is a bit of a double-edged sword. As much as we love what he's doing for the Vancouver Canucks, he's also a pending UFA. So maybe you could throw something out there. It doesn't even have to be true. You could just say like, yeah, he's not a very good penalty killer. That's not true. But just like, because like we kind of want to like, we enjoy the Dakota Joshua story, but we also kind of want to sabotage his leverage because we want this guy back on the team. And I don't know if we're going to be able to afford it anymore.
I'm sure he's really happy listening this morning as he's driving
Thanks for nothing, Dakota.
Trying to sabotage my career and my bankroll.
I mean, he's still going to get a good contract. Just come on. we want to keep him on the team, though.
Well, if they don't know who Dakota Joshua is, hockey fans are going to learn all about him. And I can certainly say, living in Toronto, we know about him here in Toronto. I mean, I'm sure the Leafs fans are sitting there and there's a lot of consternation about, my God, you know, how did they let this guy get away? And, you know, there's been a few of those guys here in the Toronto market. When you look at Mason Marchman and a few other guys, big body power forwards who can do a lot of things, it's really great. He's worked really hard. You know, this didn't just happen for him. And I think a guy like Rick Tocchet, what's made him so effective as the Canucks head coach is he's been able to kind of grind out every last little bit from every guy. Whether you're a super skilled guy like Quinn Hughes or whether you're a guy like Dakota Joshua, who isn't necessarily the most skilled player, but how are you going to play to get the most level of success? And that's what we're seeing with him. I mean, Garland and Joshua were, you know, arguably the two best players in many respects for the team last night. That speaks a lot. That speaks volumes. And to be honest with you, when you win a Stanley Cup or when you make a deep run in the playoffs, those types of players have to be there, you know, the complementary pieces. The other team's going to shut down Pettersson and Besser and Miller on certain nights. So who's going to step up? Who's going to be that guy to be effective? And last night it was really fun to see him, just a physical force. Joshua Garland was cycling the puck and doing all his little sort of water bug moves behind the net. And listen, it was a really, really good win for Vancouver and a good start to this postseason. And the thing I liked the most though, guys, was really just the emotion of the building. And we forgot what it's like, right? I mean, it's been a decade since you guys have hosted a playoff game there, and that's what it's all about. And just the level of excitement. This was night, you know, two of what could be a 60-night run for some team this postseason. So it's just really cool to have seen that, you know, unfold in a great Canadian hockey market like Vancouver last night.
You know, for me, there was always going to be like three stories from last night. One was going to be the return of playoff hockey and the vibe and the feels. And we went over that in detail. Bruff was in the building and the energy and the electricity. Two was going to be, you know, the actual game and how the Canucks played. And we've talked about that at length. I feel like now is probably a good time to actually mention the opponent. So you guys, you know, the Nashville Predators were out there and they were leading for a good chunk of that game yesterday. What did you guys on the panel think? Early thoughts on the Preds. What did you see out of Nashville yet last night?
Well, I mean, Nashville did, you know, play the game that they play, right? They are opportunistic. They skate hard. They play a good system. And they have a lot of veteran players. I think, you know, where they might be up against it in some respects is, you know, the depth of the Vancouver Canucks, I think, is greater than the depth of the Nashville Predators. If you want to kind of break it down position by position, they match up really well in many respects. And they certainly have the advantage when it comes to playoff experience. But unless they're going to get really great production from Forsberg, you know, obviously they rely a lot on Josi to provide from the back end as well. I'm not sure the depth is there the way we have it with Vancouver. And the special teams of Vancouver, you know, haven't been brilliant, but I think it was such a liability. The PK of the Canucks was such a liability last year. But they got an important kill versus Nashville last night. And I think special teams is going to be really key in this series, right? You know, I know they allowed, I think that first one was a power play goal, right? But or was it a power play goal? No, Ryan O'Reilly's was
Ryan O'Reilly's was the power play goal, yeah.
Yeah, but then, you know, they were able to effectively to shut it down a little bit on the PK after that. You know, the Predators are going to play the style we saw last night. It's not going to be that dissimilar, and they do have some bona fide stars on that team. But again, I do think Vancouver top to bottom is the better team, and that's why I can't even remember what my prediction was. It was either Vancouver in five or Vancouver in six, but it was, you know, I fully expect Vancouver to be advancing to the next round.
So of all the home teams won?
All six, yep.
What do you think was Vancouver, God, we're just like demanding praise at this point. Was that the best atmosphere of all the home games?
Oh, man. It's you know what? When you're not in the building, it's hard to say. You know, it was pretty rocking in Florida. I know that sounds crazy, but it's a good building, and especially when you have Tampa in there, right? Like, they don't have the fan base the way Vancouver or Winnipeg or, you know, Boston has, but the people who do spend the time and pay the money, they want to be there, and they recognize, I think, there's some excitement based on how the team performed last year. That building was going off. You know, MSG is a really good building too. I don't know if you've been there since.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's and listen, Rempe scores the first goal. I mean, that guy is, I won't say he's Derek Jeter just yet, but they love him there. They love their types of sports icons in that marketplace. And he has quickly developed into that like guy. And the fact when Panarin scored, we all know last year, he did nothing in the playoffs. He took a lot of criticism, rightfully so, when they lost to New Jersey last year. He scored then, and I think there was a sort of a collective sigh of relief there. The buildings are electric, man. Mm-hmm. Like, Winnipeg, how good was that? The whiteout. Did you see the scene outside Winnipeg? Like, outside their building?
It's incredible.
This is, and it was 16 degrees, which helps, and I understand it was a pretty sunny day in Vancouver as well. But, you know, like, yeah, they don't need an excuse in Winnipeg to go outside when you can actually go outside and not get frostbite. But that was the whiteout night one. That was a discernible home ice advantage. You know, the chants and the yelling and the screaming, and, you know, that building's going to be alive. And listen, we might be staring down, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we could be staring down potentially an all-Canadian conference final if things align properly. And the idea of Vancouver or Edmonton going up against Winnipeg in the conference final would be absolutely majestic, not just, you know, from a Sportsnet standpoint, but just two hockey markets who are with an insatiable appetite, you know, with real diehard, sophisticated fans. But yeah, listen, Vancouver held its own last night. That's for sure. The building was great.
Did the Leafs have issues with the crowd in Boston, or was that mostly the Boston Bruins players that they had an issue with?
Yeah, that's a good question. And tonight, you know, it's not a must win till it's a must win, but this feels like if the Leafs go back down 2-0, especially if they lose in somewhat lopsided fashion like they did in game one, it could be really difficult. You know, the Leafs weren't disciplined. What I liked about, you know, Winnipeg's game, especially, they were throwing around a lot of hits, but they were playing within the boundaries of what's allowed. You know, they were being very physical, but they were being smart. Boston was being physical and smart. In Toronto, you know, they don't have a very good PK. They could use a guy like Sam Lafferty. There you go. and they, you know, and they, you know, Domi's penalty, which led to a power play goal, was not a good penalty. You just have to play within the parameters. Brad Marchand, and I don't need to tell Canucks fans this, he is the master agitator. He will say and do anything on the ice, and he gets away with a lot of stuff because he's smart. You know, Domi got under Domi's skin right from the opening faceoff, if you're watching the game.
Yeah.
And this isn't putting it on Domi, but my point being the Leafs have to play a lot more disciplined game. Their PK is not good enough. And it also, when you're on the PK, your skilled players, Marner, Matthews, et cetera, aren't out there operating. So one thing Toronto needs is a lead. They've played Boston five times this year, guys. They have not led for a single minute. Let Boston chase the game. Because if there is one problem that I, when I look at the Boston team, if there is one deficit on that team, it's they don't have a ton of firepower. They have a few guys who score, but they don't have, you know, I mean, obviously Pasta is a fantastic scorer, but they just, you know, when you look at them top to bottom, they're middle of the pack from a scoring standpoint. The Leafs finished second behind Colorado in goals. They can score goals. They can't necessarily keep the puck out of their net. Let Toronto play with a lead. I think that's going to be really key tonight. In fact, we didn't see a lead change in the first four games of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Yeah. The team who scored first ultimately went on and won and never lost their lead, even though some of the games went to a tie. So scoring first is imperative for the Leafs tonight. Carrying that momentum and that lead back to Toronto will change the whole complexion of the series. But if they lose again tonight, guys, and Boston is so, you know, confident in their identity, it'll be a tough road for the Leafs to come home down, you know, 2-0 against a very good Boston team.
Just another casual quadruple header tonight. Leafs Bruins kicks it off, and then we get the other two Western Conference series start tonight as well. Golden Knights and Stars, and then Kings and Oilers in the nightcap. So David, enjoy it. It should be a lot of fun. Another awesome night of playoff hockey ahead of us.
Thanks for the shout out on the show last night, David. That was, our ratings are going to go through the roof.
Yeah. Listen, you guys do a great job, and I'm sure Canucks Nation. It's kind of funny though when you do the radio stuff, right? I know in Toronto, the ratings maybe are better when the team's struggling. Everyone wants to, like, get their 2 cents in as opposed to when the team's doing great. It's a very peculiar thing. But I hope, you know, Canuck Nation can just sit back and enjoy the ride. And, you know, it's all gravy to some degree, right? Because no one anticipated a 26-point turnaround. Very few people anticipated a playoff team. And very few, if anyone, anticipated a Pacific Division title. So this is all gravy. Keep that perspective and enjoy the ride.
No, we're in it now to win it all. You don't get rich saying, well, I'm just playing with house money now. You gotta want more. You gotta be greedy for it.
Except Dakota Joshua. Everyone but him.
Yeah, except him. Yeah. You take less.
What do they say? Some is good, more is better, right? So there you go. Let's hope the early returns continue, and we're talking next week and looking towards, you know, a second round opponent. I'll be extra greedy then, okay?
Sounds good, bud. Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
Be well, guys. Enjoy the games.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. That's David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So remember down the stretch where there were some injuries that the Canucks were dealing with, and there were some issues with the forward group that they were trying to deal with, and it eventually ended up with JT Miller playing with Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. And part of it was also, I think, trying to get Elias Pettersson going. And we'll talk about Petey in a bit, because there have been a lot of texts about Petey. But, you know, in order to get Petey going, sometimes Garland went up to that line. Sometimes Besser went up to that line. And, you know, some of the time down the stretch, Dakota Joshua was hurt. And it wasn't that the JT Miller line, when he was playing with Garland and Joshua, was bad. In fact, there were many times where they were very good. But we kept on saying on this show, I wish Tocchet would go back to having Garland and Joshua do their own thing. Like, split them away from JT Miller.
Yeah.
And have JT Miller drive his line and have those two drive the other line, and we didn't know if that was going to be with Bluger reuniting with Bluger, or, you know, Lindholm was hurt a lot down the stretch, and we didn't know if maybe Lindholm would be in that spot. Well, Lindholm was in that spot last night, mm-hmm. on a line with Garland and Joshua, and Miller had Besser back on his line and Suter back on his line, and those were the two best lines, right?
Yeah,
well, like the Miller line by far was the best line, and I just think it adds so much when you can have those guys on separate lines and they can each add something.
Okay, so I want to play the audio that Rick Tocchet had on Elias Lindholm, because I think it's important. We've referred to him as, like, he was supposed to be the solution when they acquired him well in advance of the deadline, right? He was going to solve a lot of the gaps, and they didn't have the right mix at forward, and Lindholm's versatility and his ability to play in different spots was going to solve a lot of the problems, and it never really came to fruition during the regular season, I think for a variety of reasons, the least of which was not his wrist injury. Last night, Rick Tocchet put it in the most plainest form possible that this is the reason last night, the kind of game that Lindholm had, a goal plus two, five hits, nearly 19 minutes of ice time, and really should have had an assist on the eventual game-winning goal for the forecheck that he got in there. This is why they got him, and this is where you start to see he's like that rug that ties the room together. Here is Rick Tocchet on Elias Lindholm following a 4-2 win over Nashville on Sunday night.
Well, I mean, let's face it, that's why we acquired him for tonight. I mean, you know, he was banged up, hurt and stuff, but this is, and you know, when he didn't play there, he skated and stuff like that, which helped, but I think these are the games why you acquire Lindholm. He was really good, 200-foot game, really good.
When he's on, and again, we haven't seen a ton of it in Vancouver, mm-hmm. but when he's on, this team becomes so much more versatile. And speaking of versatility, I mean, if you look at the ice times last night and the way that there was, again, part of the playoffs is you really dial in to the matchups because you're getting the same ones over and over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, well, tonight we're on to Columbus for a sick Tuesday nighter at Nationwide Arena. Like, you're back up against the same opponent. So you have the things where, like, we saw glimpses of the lotto line in certain situations, yep. where they were being deployed. Bluger, he got the call back. Right? They got the band back together late in the third period. They're like, go have a twirl with Garley and Joshua. And
there were some interesting line combinations. There was one right at the end where it was like, we've got Petey, Joshua, and Lindholm out together. I was like, okay, that's an interesting combination.
You know, you saw Sam Lafferty out there, unfortunately, on the opening goal for the Predators, like out there with he was playing on Petey's wing, mm-hmm. and then eventually moved to take the draw. So you see that there's, I know that we were talking about like what line combinations we're going to see going into the playoffs, but you got to see some of the wrinkles last night. Now, we may as well do the Pettersson conversation right now, because,
well, I think
it was part of that.
It also ties into the question of why did Tocchet make the changes that he did. Mm-hmm. So there were two changes. Phil DiGiuseppe goes in for Pod Colson. Let's chalk that one up to, even though I don't know if Tocchet was asked about this after the, there's a lot of questions to ask, so, you know, some didn't get asked.
What do you want?
Do you think part of it was just putting a more experienced player into a spot? Because it's a big moment.
For sure.
Yeah. So let's say that one was because of that. Why do you think he moved Lafferty up to the line with Petey and dropped Mikheyev down to the fourth line? Like, what was it? Like, if you don't know, you don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Like, maybe it was just like, we've seen this Mikheyev with Pettersson for so long.
Because they talked about it on the post-game show. I was listening to it on the way in, and they didn't really have it. No one had, like, a real great idea. The point being is that it was a deployment to the quote-unquote top line, but not really, because Lafferty finished with 8 minutes and 58 seconds, and Hoglander finished with 10:23. Mm-hmm. So they weren't being deployed as top-line wingers with Petey. That's why I was kind of trying to get to the point of there was a lot of movement and manipulation with the lines.
Well, I just thought maybe
he didn't even finish with that much ice time.
No,
if we're being honest. He finished with 18:39.
Well, he didn't deserve a ton. If he, you know, I just wonder if the lack of playing time together, at least recently, might have had an impact on that mix-up, the coverage mix-up they had on the Jason Zucker goal, right? Where they like they didn't know who was supposed to go to the point and who was to do other jobs. You know, we're not going to sit down there and break it down what happened on that play. But there was clearly a mix-up because, you know, we had two guys standing next to each other going to the point, and then Petey was kind of hanging back going, like, I don't know where to go, so I'm just going to stand here now. And then he was late to getting over to Zucker and – you know, I know there was thoughts that he might have even tipped it home a little bit.
Early returns, because the series is all of one game old, but, and someone just texted this in. It's funny, the timing of it, because I was just about to say the exact same thing. Right now, their top two lines are the Miller line.
Yeah.
And then the Lindholm-Garland for sure line. Those are the top two lines.
But we were hoping that Petey's line might be able to take advantage of some soft matchups out there, and they really couldn't. Petey had a few moments. He had a few chances on the power play. He had a nice toe drag, but on one play, but then missed the net with his shot, which was kind of a theme for the Canucks, at least through the first two periods, and it's been a theme at times all season. So that was a little bit disappointing for him to not even get the puck on net.
But what you are seeing is Tocchet and his coaching staff really working to try and find spots for Pettersson.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're trying to find different, they're manipulating things to try and find him different ways because they don't want to go away from whatever Miller's got going, which was great last night. I mean, talk it postgame, we haven't played the audio, we don't need to, I can paraphrase it. He basically said he was the heartbeat of the team, especially when they were trailing and
he
really
so
got the
good.
Guys going.
He was so good.
You're not going to do anything with that Joshua Garland duo other than maybe switch Lindholm. Or I guess Bluger got a twirl. I guess you could maybe try and put Pettersson there for a spell,
no.
Make him be the center. But I don't think I don't think that's the play.
No point in doing that.
So the reality of it is, your $11.6 million a year guy is being moved around to try and find different spots to get him going a little bit. And that's just, I mean, I don't. It's not a good thing. It's not a horrible thing because they won last night and we're up with the good vibes and everything. But I think you know exactly where I'm going with this, like.
Why are you always picking on Petey?
It's
God, I come in here every morning and like, you know, here's Halford talking about Petey again.
I just love my Petey talk.
Hey, listen, all I say was that there were people out there that kept on texting in and ripping me in particular for saying, you wait to the playoffs. You wait to the playoffs. Petey will bring it to another level. Well, he didn't. It was the exact same story last night. I'm not going to bemoan it because there are a lot of good things to talk about and I want to talk about those things, but he looked, it was exactly the same. There were a couple flashes here and there, but he was by no means driving his line. He was by no means dominant. And you can say he made some good defensive plays or he did this or did that. Compare what he did to Miller. Compare what he did to Dakota Joshua. You know, like he is capable of so much more. Now, is he injured? Possibly.
Right? Well, okay. Look.
Possibly. I don't know. Who knows? I have a feeling it's mostly between his ears because we've seen him make the odd good play and then the next shift he'll have some jump, right? Which sends to me like it's a confidence thing. But, you know, this isn't – it didn't cost him in the first game, but it's hard to imagine the Canucks going on a deep run if Pettersson is just kind of out there.
I do want to add, though – and by the way, people are texting in. Yeah, I think we didn't say it out loud or the quiet part out loud, but it was Lafferty had the wrong read on the goal. It wasn't Pettersson, it was Lafferty. Your $11.6 million a year center, which I'm going to keep bringing up the dollar total. Also, like the conversation is you switched his wingers from Mikheyev to Lafferty, right? I mean, that in itself is a built-in caveat or, dare I say, excuse for your guy because that's not exactly the most...
But he's not moving out
there.
He's not winning puck battles. He's not.
And it's
he's
also not the most
things.
Inspiring winger. I just want to present the full conversation. That's all.
But here's the thing: they tried him. They gave him Garland for a bit. Did he look amazing?
They got.
No.
Did they put the lotto line back together too? They've done it. Like they are working.
Yeah, they gave him Besser. Didn't really, you know, like Besser works. Seemed to work a lot better with JT Miller because JT Miller is taking it upon himself to go out and do things and. When you play as inspirationally as JT Miller did last night, the others on your line are going to follow.
JT was driving, right? That's a big difference. Okay, coming up in the 7 o'clock hour of the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, James Myrtle from The Athletic is going to join us. We'll talk some Leafs. We'll talk all these other series as well because Myrtle's been obviously covering the NHL on the whole. We got six series already underway. Two more get underway tonight, and I am very excited to watch Edmonton and Los Angeles get underway in the nightcap. Also, Vegas is taking on Dallas in the first game of their series as well. Another quadruple header, so there's tons of playoff hockey. It's an awesome time for the NHL. It's an awesome time for the sports. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.